Today on The Independent, Notre Dame fan Ty Hildebrandt of the Solid Verbal Podcast stops by for a therapeutic discussion about the Irish's loss to Ohio State. Plus, Pete and I preview the Duke game and the rest of Notre Dame season.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by my co-host Matt Fortuna. I'm in South Bend, still ground zero from college football after last weekend, as some national reporters hung out a little bit with Marcus Freeman on Monday. We had a little bit of access to him, talk through the ill-fated end of the Ohio State game, and tried to spin it ahead to Duke. Had some access to both coordinators on Tuesday night and some players. Jared Parker kind of talked through the screen pass that went awry, but also the offensive line playing well. And then, Al Golden talked a little bit about that 3rd and 19 call, why he wanted to play that coverage, why he wanted to rush three. We can chat a little bit more about that. But Matt, with the with time and getting a little bit farther away from our post-game show in the press box, have you thought any differently about what you saw and what it means for Notre Dame season coming out of Saturday night?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense of like we can play Monday morning, Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning quarterback all we want, and that'll never make sense. Like it just won't. In fact, the I feel like the more and more people you ask on or off the record, the more and more you look at it, the less and less it almost makes sense, because you're just not going to get a clear answer. And frankly, no, there is no clear answer, because something like that doesn't happen by on purpose. I think, as with everything, especially in this 14 playoff era, you think playoff, 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 and you think implications. And, I it's obviously it's September. Like you can't say, oh, that ends their season or anything like that. But like you do the math, cause that's what we all do. It's a pennant race season in baseball right now. Everyone's doing the math, and do you root for Ohio State to win out? If you're an Notre Dame fan, is that a good proposition based on the fact that Ohio State didn't look all that great in winning and they've got a really tough schedule ahead of them? You root for Pac-12 chaos, the SEC, is going to get in. And frankly, so is the Big Ten, probably whoever wins it, at least one. So you start thinking big picture, what that means and what that could mean for 12 team playoff. Funny enough, I'm in Chicago. I was at college football playoff commissioner meetings today, and I actually got a briefly meet Pete Pavakwa, the new Notre Dame athletic director, who was there with Jack Swarbrick, the current Notre Dame athletic director, said hello to him as well. And I also, the story that just won't go away, and in the headline that almost made my brain blow up, although it ended up not being too bad, but you put the words Lou Holtz, Dan Dockick, and Alkick in the same sentence, and I'm thinking, oh dear God, where are we going with this? And it was actually a pretty tame, reasonable conversation, in which Lou essentially defended himself, and I think we all can agree with that. And honestly, the biggest takeaway for me was he said he called Marcus Freeman on Monday and apologized for giving the opposition bulletin board material, which seems unnecessary, but a nice gesture to do in the aftermath of defeat. Ohio State is a bye this week, so I don't know if Ryan Day's talks this week at all. And in fact, I imagine that was part of why he said everything he said on Saturday. But next time he does speak, I can't tell whether I really want this to be like a back and forth where, all right,
you
Ryan Day's
Ryan
now
Day's
got this to say.
To Lou Holtz response, yes. To Ryan Day's response to Lou Holtz. Okay.
And we're going to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I mean, Lou Holtz likes to talk, as we all know. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not so great. In this case, I thought it was pretty funny, but I'm sure Ohio State fans want him on game day for the Michigan game so he can fire them up again. But it's just like, what, throw it on our tab, right? One more thing of the absurd from what was just an absurd all around weekend around these parts. And you throw in the fact that the Louisville game's a night game, and that's now 4 straight 7:30 p.m. kickoff times for Notre Dame, which I believe is a first even for them, back-to-back game days. And then obviously the USC game at home on NBC in a couple of weeks as well. So You want the spotlight. You got the spotlight, Notre Dame. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You want no sleep. You got no sleep, Pete Sampson. In my case, at least for the home games, that's for sure. This story slash program isn't going anywhere unless they get routed by Duke, which I don't think is going to happen.
I think they would still be in the spotlight. It would just be a different one at that point. We'll preview the game in full in the last part of the show, but like this game is incredibly fascinating to me because Duke is legitimately good. It's going to be hard for Notre Dame to score, but it's one of those games where I think if Notre Dame comes out with like a B- performance, like that might not be enough.
I think you got to
be better than that.
Like this isn't like cute old Duke punching above its weight, right? Like even when Notre Dame lost them in 16, obviously that was a very flawed Notre Dame team. Like Duke did have, even though we didn't know it at the time, a top 10 pick at quarterback in Daniel Jones. Like, but I don't know if anyone really believed in Duke. I think that was probably a 3-touchdown spread or so at the time for Notre Dame. They have a first round quarterback here, and he's one who's not sneaking up on anyone, who no one's laughing at when you say that phrase. Mm-hmm. Riley Leonard is legit. You know, it's funny, you know, I think it was during the Clemson game and maybe some other games. Anytime there's a quarterback or a player who's having a good year, who was not on, you know, not the non Caleb Williams and non Sam Hartman division, someone who wasn't on our radar, you know, you get the background information from the announcing team during the game. Like, oh, he was actually this in basketball, or maybe he was going to walk on for Coach K and yada, yada, yada. And again, some of that's filler material. You kind of roll your eyes at it a little bit because, again, it's Riley Leonard. No disrespect to his play, but he wasn't mm-hmm. some big-time recruit. Have you seen this guy's basketball highlights on YouTube? I mean,
no,
he looks like LeBron James out there. Like, he is dunking over everyone left and right. Like, and again, I'm not entirely sure what the competition in Fairhope, Alabama was level wise, but like you watch this guy play, you're like, this isn't your like goofy white Duke player. Like this guy was freaking athlete. And you saw it in that Clemson game with some of those long runs. Like he's got speed and he'll lower his shoulder and knock you on your ass. So he's a really good player. You know, he obviously showed a lot last year and he's proven this year that it's not a fluke. I mean, if you watch that Clemson game, obviously the operation from Clemson's standpoint was flawed offensively. But Duke really took it to them. That game, it was close because you just didn't believe it was going to happen. And then the game ending, you looked up and you thought, yeah, no, Duke pretty thoroughly outplayed them for four quarters and it didn't really feel all that fluky. So, and even last week, you know, I looked at them going to UConn, who again, is not a good football team by any stretch of imagination, but played NC State close at home in the opener, has a sleepy home environment, is, you know, has Jim Mora, proven coach, leading them. And I see a 22.5 point spread with Duke a week before game day in Notre Dame. And you're thinking they're not going to lose this game, but you know, they could sleepwalk through a half or so. And no, they are up 17-0. I think in the first quarter, they had a shutout go until the very end. Notre Dame fans know this, you know it, I know it. The whole nation knows it now. Mike Elko is a hell of a football coach. If I'm Michigan State, that's my first call right now. And I'm not even sure who's second is. And frankly, I think he might even be able to do better. Oh, sorry. I did not mean to make you laugh. And you can explain that part here shortly.
Oh, my God. There was,
I guess Marcus Freeman's my first call. Yeah.
There was
Phil Belichick and Nick Saban say no, that is.
It's a Michigan State air quote reporter who apparently said that Marcus Freeman should be the next Michigan State head coach because Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame was only making like $2.5 million. Clearly that was a, what did the USA Today coaching salary database tell me? I'll just say that. That was in a week of absurdity, that was actually pretty high on the list.
Some of the replies to that for Michigan State fans, like, why would we want him? He lost to Marshall and Sanford, which I guess you're not wrong, but you know, it's funny. Like I'm pretty sure Freeman was on Duke's interview list the week he got the Notre Dame job. Among others.
Yeah, my ears were open to that when he said he'd never been to Duke before on Monday. And I was like, well, you almost did.
You don't have to go there to interview anymore, do you?
Yeah, I suppose not.
Elko's a really good coach. I mean, to put it in perspective, I don't say this to talk down on Tony Elliott or Virginia, but like Tony Elliott essentially had the choice between Virginia and Duke when he took the Virginia job. and he ended up taking Virginia. And frankly, based on the states of both programs at the time, and in my personal opinion at the time, the potential of both programs, I thought he made a smart choice. Now, again, this might say more about him than anything else. But that shows you like where Duke was. I think they won three games in David Cutcliffe's last year. They clearly tailed off. And Mike Elko came in there. I think their over under last year was 3.5. And I remember in week two, I covered their game at Northwestern, who obviously was not a good football team, but it was 21-0 after the first three drives. And you're thinking, holy crap, like who are these guys? Like what, like they're not supposed to be doing this in a Power Five road game with a first year head coach. They're just not. And they won 9 freaking games last year, which really is incredible when you look at the state of that program when Mike Elko took it over. So he knows his way around the block. He did not – I think he left Wake 1 or 2 years before Sam Hartman got there to go to Notre Dame and then to go to A&M after that. But he's a very, very good football coach. He's hired a great staff. Tyler Santucci is the first-year defense coordinator there. I was a little surprised.
Notre Dame.
Pucci. Was he at Notre Dame?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like his GA. He was basically
With Elko?
Bulla and Laurinaitis are now.
Okay. I don't remember that. I was surprised he didn't get the A&M full-time DC job when Elko left for Duke, as were a lot of people there. And now he's at Duke. So, yeah, it's really well-coached football team. I caught bits and pieces of Elko's press conference this week, and he did say, like, look, this isn't a stage that our kids are not used to, but they're smart kids. They're going to keep their heads down and control what they can control. And frankly, it helps having that Clemson game and the spotlight. You know, it's a Monday, that's a Labor Day night game. Every single football fan in the world at all levels was watching that game that night because it's the only thing going on. And they got introduced to Duke football. So this isn't, it's a relatively novel stage for Duke, but this specific team has already been there and done that a month ago, not even a month ago. And so I don't think, you know, the atmosphere or the environment's going to get to them the way you might think it would be relative to a team like Notre Dame that plays in this kind of environment damn near every week at this point.
All right. Well, we'll get to our interview with Ty Hildebrand of the Solid Verbal. We brought him on as a catharsis guest, which I think that he definitely served and checked that box for us. So you'll enjoy that interview. Matt and I will come back, talk a little bit more about the weekend of Notre Dame versus Duke after the interview.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Roback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Roback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Roback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Roback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Roback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
Hey, Pete, College Game Day is at yet another Notre Dame game this weekend. You know it would be a great way to represent the Irish?
Probably some retail therapy at homefieldapparel.com. All first-time buyers can get 10% off Notre Dame gear by using the promo code INDEPENDENT23. We've talked about some of our purchases in the past. I've got the Our Lady of Victory sweatshirt. As we talked about in last week's show, now there's a green Sam Hartman Victory March t-shirt. Very fashionable. Still on brand. So all listeners of The Independent can go to homefieldapparel.com, use the promo code INDEPENDENT23 for 10% off your first order of Notre Dame gear. Welcome to The Independent, a friend of our previous show and our current show too, Ty Hildebrand, co-host of the Solid Verbal. I feel like the original college football podcast, I think it'd be to say. And Ty, you are, as everyone knows here, I think you're a Penn State grad, but a Notre Dame fan. And as Matt and I were figuring out what guests we want to have on this week, we talked about, you know, Brady Quinn, do we want to do David Cutcliffe? Because he was the head coach at Duke. And I was like, no, it just, neither of those felt appropriate after last weekend. I felt like we needed to tap into the more of a fan zeitgeist. So I guess my first question is, like, in the 12 stages of grief, where you have shock, denial, disbelief, all the way down to blaming Brian Kelly. Where are you after last weekend?
Yeah. Well, first off, thanks for the invite. Secondly, if you thought of those guys and opted for me, that means they weren't available. So I take no umbrage whatsoever. Thank you. As always, it's a pleasure to be with you guys. Where am I at in the 12 stages? I don't know if I know the full 12 stages. I can tell you I spent a fair amount of time over the last 72 hours trying to figure out the best way to characterize that loss, because everyone's heard of a stomach punch, but that didn't really feel apt to me because it felt like a slow moving car crash at the very end. In particular, the way Notre Dame played in the second half was admirable, but that last drive in particular, the last drive, as soon as Ohio State got the ball back, I started getting these feelings of deep doom, and it felt inevitable to me. And perhaps that is me kind of like hearkening back to like some of the Kelly era doubts that I would have about Notre Dame football. But I just, in my heart of hearts, did not believe they were going to stop them on that last drive. And I kind of wavered back and forth between, can they do it? Might they not do it? Can they do it? And then they got down to the goal line. And I was like, if they pull this off, this is going to be something that drives the metrics north of like 800%. And they didn't. The metrics still went up because this was a crazy game, but not a stomach punch. Maybe you guys can help me figure out what the right characterization for it is.
I'll help you here. You guys said 12 stages of grief. It's 5 stages of grief, 12 steps of sobriety. Now, maybe they're one and the same in light of what just happened this weekend. So I'm not going to judge you here if that's where you turned. But no, it's funny. Like, I had almost the opposite reaction in real time. And maybe that's because Marcus Freeman is there and the vibes around the program are just that much more positive. And even in the aftermath, I'm a little surprised at how kind of easy everyone's taken this, relatively speaking. But I guess you see them lose. At what point, like, we're, Pete and I are on the opposite end zone. So we're basically looking at the Jumbotron to see what happened. We get in the media room and all of a sudden the chatter's like, did you see there were 10? There were 10. There were 10. And I'm like, wait, what? But what point did you, presumably watch on TV, realize not only did you lose, you lost with the biggest coaching gaffe we could ever recall?
Yeah, it's wild. So Dan and I on our show, The Solid Verbal, we do a midnight live stream. After every week of games, we go on midnight live on YouTube and we try to recap all the action. And of course, we led with Notre Dame, Ohio State, because this was the big game of the day. And I didn't realize until I saw it flashing across Twitter. You know, I was kind of caught up in my own prep with other games that were going on, trying to comprehend what I just saw from my favorite team. And I saw it flash up on Twitter initially that, oh, there were only 10 men on the last play. And then shortly thereafter, somebody was like, oh, no, wait. There were 10 men on the last two plays. It's like, what? You've got to be kidding me. So, you know, I'm trying not to focus too much on that. Like you said, it's a huge coaching gaffe. And I know that Marcus Freeman has said now they've got a signal to reach out and touch somebody from the offense to prevent the play from going forward if it should happen again. I should hope that won't happen again.
Right.
Yeah. But I think what actually bothers me more is the play that got them down to the goal line to start. And that was kind of what I was fearful of. You know, I don't mean to present myself as like this self-loathing Notre Dame fan that as soon as the other team gets the ball, there's this feeling of dread and they're going to go down and score. Like, that is not the defense was awesome for the vast majority of that football game. It was just those final 90 seconds that really get the blood flowing. And I had this deep sense of doubt creep into my head. Like, oh, no, this is not going to go well. And it was really that play that I think epitomized it. Emeka Igbuka just kind of working the seam, finding a way to get open and not really meeting much resistance from Notre Dame on a really long play where they could have. They. I don't know if it was a matter of not wanting to bring the pressure, a matter of not wanting to get beaten by one of those receivers if you do bring the pressure. Whatever the game plan was there, they got beaten by him anyway. And that was the play that really got us to the situation where now we're talking about 10 men on the 2-inch line.
Yeah, there's that. There's, you know, DJ Brown's interception that was just, you know, off the fingertips. But I'm with you on the 3rd and 19 because it felt like, what does a quarterback need on 3rd and 19? He needs time for his receivers to run 19 yards. What does rushing 3 give the quarterback? Time for those receivers to run 19 yards and sit down on his own. So yeah, that was tough.
I mean, here's the thing. Notre Dame is not the only team this year that's going to have to solve that problem.
Yeah.
Right. You're going to see that the rest of the way. It doesn't matter who Ohio State plays, because it's constantly going to be this conundrum of, all right, do we want to rush Kyle McCord and try and get in his face and take him out of rhythm and make him uncomfortable at the risk of putting some of their star receivers, one-on-one with our secondary, or do you want to try and drop back and do you want to try and play coverage? And in that case, it, hindsight's 20/20. Maybe that wasn't the right move. Al Golden would probably say it's not the right move in hindsight. But it's certainly not going to be a unique problem the rest of the way.
It's interesting to me. It gets more perplexing, I think, the further away we get from Saturday. And I say that because in the moment, there's so much shock and you're still trying to process what actually happened. I don't know. I think we've come probably far as a society and as a Notre Dame fan base if we're not calling for everyone's head after every mistake. But I cannot think of a coaching gaffe like this ever, at any level. Look, Pete Carroll throwing in the Super Bowl and not putting Reggie Bush. Yeah, that's like a bad play call. But like literally forgetting how many people should be on the field on the two biggest plays. And by the way, not for nothing, you think Notre Dame's, taking shit now. Can you imagine if Ohio State, because Ohio State clearly didn't know it the first time. They wouldn't have thrown the ball. And their toughness is getting questioned. And they get in by a centimeter, playing 11 on 10, running to the one spot where the 11th man should have been. I mean, I can only imagine what the Ohio State fan base would be like right now had they lost that game in that fashion. I guess my question is like, I mean this positively, what would Marcus Freeman have to do to lose a fan base at this point? Like, it's just, I cannot think of a worse coaching move in my lifetime. Lost the biggest game of the life. Like, I don't want to be melodramatic about it, but like, they're 11-1. Like, it's going to be hard for them to get in. And again, they have a long way to go to get to 11-1, but like, they could have ruined their championship hopes literally because they forgot how many people were on the field. Like, I still can't wrap my brain around that.
It's bad, dude. It's bad. It's really bad. I hear you. And I think what I have been telling myself over and over again, if only to move beyond the loss, is that is not the reason, the sole reason that they lost. There are moments that happened on that drive throughout the course of the game. If Notre Dame gets points early on some of those long drives, maybe they're not in that situation. If one of those tip balls, those near interceptions goes their way, then perhaps we're not in that situation where come down to, the 2-inch line, suddenly it all rides on whether or not there's 11 guys on the field that can stop the opponent. So that's what I've been telling myself. But to your point, like, it's horrible. It's a terrible mistake and it can't happen again. I think he handled it well in his own right. I mean, he kind of owned it. But I think in terms of losing the fan base, the way you would lose a fan base is if you go out there and get blown out by Ohio State.
Right.
Or if you get blown out by USC or blown out by Clemson. If these games, as we move forward, if the team does not improve, and they're already pretty good, but if we get to a point where suddenly a big game scenario, they get blown out and they don't look competitive, because that's kind of been the fear in the back of your mind. I talked about it on my show. This was like the first big game in a long time for Notre Dame where I was not worried about them getting blown out. I knew they weren't going to get blown out. I was starting to wonder, okay, how can they win? What are the various pathways look like that they can actually win this game? I feel like that's an important change of mindset that Marcus Freeman has helped usher in. But if it comes to the point where they play USC, they play Clemson, they play, I don't know, Duke this weekend, right? Is we shouldn't overlook the Blue Devils. Mm-hmm. If at some point this year it feels like Notre Dame is outplayed or outcoached in like a very dramatic way, that's when I think you start having that conversation. This was just a hard fought loss. And a really bad mistake to kind of put the cherry on top.
It is, I mean, to Matt's question, like, let's go back to Pittsburgh 2012 and the refs decide to throw the flag when Notre Dame has two players with the same number on a field goal block and the field goal misses. I mean, that would have taken Notre Dame out of the national championship game.
Scott Booker would have been fired the next day.
Yeah,
I guarantee you.
That was a atrocious coaching move that Notre Dame escaped, which, like, if Ohio State wants to throw laterally on third down after doing it on second down, like, they would have escaped it on Saturday night. Just Ohio State was a little smarter than that. So I don't know. It's like with Freeman, I thought that he Saturday, I don't think he had complete information when he was in the postgame press conference. Like, I don't know if he knew at that point that they had 10 men for two plays instead of one.
Yeah, the initial reply about not wanting the penalty was kind of dubious.
Yeah,
because that was the third thing that I saw. The third thing that I saw is the first two were there were 10 men on the last play. Then there were 10 men on the second to last play. And then the rationale was, well, we didn't want to get a penalty. You could take 1,000 penalties on the 2-inch line. It's not really going to matter all that much. Yeah. And so that to me did not compute. And I agree. My sense was either he was kind of blindsided by the moment and panicked and didn't know what to say, or perhaps didn't have complete information.
It just is like, it goes back to like, all right, Marcus Freeman has coached 19 games at Notre Dame. And I was looking this up. Like, I think when Brian Kelly got hired, he'd coached like 230 and Lou Holtz had coached like 198. You know, they got to have their 10 men on the field penalties when nobody was paying attention.
Right.
Marcus Freeman gets to have them with 10 million people watching. I think at that point it was 14 million where it peaked at the end of the game. So I thought that he handled it pretty well Monday in his press conference, where it's just like, because I asked him, like, you're the head coach, you're not in charge of substitutions, but you're in charge of the systems and processes being in place to make those work. Like, when you audited this, what happened? And he's like, basically all you can say is like, it's on me. Like, I will eat this in its entirety publicly, which the guy before him didn't. And I think that, I mean, to Matt's point about like keeping the fan base or losing the fan base, like, I do think that the fan base by and large respects that kind of answer to that kind of question, because there was an opportunity to go off. And he was much more measured than some other coaches would be.
I mean, look, there were many a press conference where Brian Kelly found a way to blame the execution by the players or coaches, or, you know, that was one of the knocks on him that I think fans were quick to point out when he left. And so Marcus Freeman owning it in the manner that he did, I think was important. I think that's really the only way you can move forward. Now, the question is, what does it look like this week? This week is huge, and it was always going to be a huge game. It was always going to be a weird matchup, just given the way that it fell on the schedule. But I think how they're able to rebound as a team, how they're able to move forward, what kind of energy do they have when they come out in the first 8 minutes of that game? That'll be really telling. Coming off of like a heartbreaking loss at home in the manner that they did, Duke's going to be fired up. To whatever extent Duke gets fired up at home, they will be fired up. Game day will be there. I mean, this is a big moment for that program. So how Notre Dame responds now in light of everything that's transpired over the last week is going to be really important.
It's going to be interesting to kind of like monitor the response, so to speak, not just this week, but really throughout the course of the season, right? Like, I'm sure every player that comes out to speak this week will say, like, we support our coach, we love each other, yada, yada, yada. Like, the places where this gets tested behind the scenes, essentially, is when Freeman or his staff gets in someone's face in November and they kind of say, F you don't even know how to count. Like, and they're not going to come out and say that, but it's going to be an eye roll. You know what I mean? Like, that's where you learn about the trust and the actual bonds with this team. And I don't know, we'll know about it if they lose against Duke, but even if they win against Duke, I still think like that's going to be a season long thing to kind of monitor.
Do you think it's that tenuous though?
I don't think it's tenuous. I don't think so, but I mean, that'd be going through my mind. I'd have a hard time getting yelled at by a guy who cost me a game.
That's where I think the players are much smarter than that and know, like, it's the head coach was not the person that forgot to count. You know what I mean? Right. Like,
but who was?
I know it's not the head coach.
Well, I'm not saying. The hypothetical exchange.
If some GA got in somebody's face and yelled, like, then maybe you would have that issue.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I didn't mean Freeman in general. I meant whoever was responsible or someone. Like we've all heard of players tuning their coaches out before. This would be a very easy time to do it if you have that attitude. I think this could be entirely another discussion, and you could spin this positively or negatively. Marcus Freeman, the biggest coaching gaffe we've ever seen. And most of the talk has been about Ryan Day's behavior. And Ryan Day won, and I'm not defending the way he acted afterward, but he's taken a lot of crap. and for the way he won and the way his teams have played in recent years. And, you know, part of me thinks, okay, Ryan Day went undefeated in his first two regular seasons and he wasn't Urban Meyer. So it was like, oh my God, this guy's awesome. Like, he's doing better than Urban and he's not Urban. We love him. And now you're seeing that that job can make even the most normal among coaches lose their damn minds in some moments. But I also think if the roles were reversed, if Ohio State lost that way, everyone in Columbus and the state of Ohio would be calling for Ryan Day's head. And right now it's like Notre Dame's like, hey, look, we had the highest rated game in the college football season. Hey, look, game day was here. Pat McAfee said we had a great time. Like, yeah, they had 10 million. Ohio State had 17 million for Michigan last year. You think they're saying, look how many people watch us get our ass kicked by Michigan. Like, I almost think it's like, hey, this is why Notre Dame's a good job. Like, the pressure, as big as it is, like, as long as you're a nice guy, people are going to like you. Like, it's, I know they probably don't want to spin it that way publicly, but like, no other major blue blood programs coaches get in off this lightly where they lose a big game like that. None.
I mean, it's not a bad point. It's like, not a bad, I mean, it isn't. I mean, if it, I mean, it, you're right. If it were,
I mean,
Ryan Day,
I mean, Reese is eating this SEC sandwich right now where at Notre Dame is just like, oh, you know, he's doing a good job. Like,
I think
like Mike Bray would always say that he'd say after big games, like, yeah, I go into halftime and say, yeah, whatever. If you guys lose, people are going to say at least you're good kids who get good grades. And that's that. Like, that's, you know, he was mocking it, but like, there is an attitude of that. Now basketball is different than football, but like, hey, look, Pat McAfee said he had a great time at our weekend. Hey, come to Notre Dame. Forget about the final score. Like, Ohio State's not operating that way. Alabama sure as hell ain't operating that way.
No, I mean, look, you're 100% right about Ryan Day. And I think what we learned in the post game is that the pressure that he's been under is going to his head a little bit more than perhaps he let on previously. If Lou Holtz is the breaking point, he's under a lot of pressure. Okay. No disrespect to Lou Holtz, but Lou Holtz is kind of an afterthought at this point.
And did you see the skit? I think I said it to you, Pete, last night.
Yeah.
On McAfee.
Yeah. I mean, like,
oh, it's so good.
If that's what takes Ryan Day kind of out of his normal rhythm, that Ryan Day is under more pressure than we can possibly imagine. And, you know, certainly on top of losing back-to-back years to Michigan, you lose a game like that. If roles were reversed, then yeah, there would be heads rolling, I think, in that scenario. I kind of wonder if this is the Notre Dame fan base finding Marcus Freeman and his renewed energy around the program invigorating and enlightening and exciting and wanting to give him the benefit of the doubt, maybe more so than they did Brian Kelly. That's at least how I feel.
No, it's definitely true. Yeah.
You know, I think that he has done some great things in a very short period of time off the field, with hopefully infusing this program with more talent than they've had ever before. You obviously need to translate that to wins, and maybe that's the next step. I think I have been willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, if only because it felt like it got off to a really rocky start last year. It seems like much of what we read in the offseason has all been very positive. If this was the first big test, they came about 2 inches away from passing it. So at least in that sense, it's been really positive through the early part of this Freeman tenure. This is a bad mistake. They do have a chance to rectify it, though. And I know it's kind of like a separate conversation altogether. This season was probably starting from a point of how do they perform against Ohio State, USC, and Clemson. And I think it very quickly went to a place of, can this team make the playoff because of how they started? I don't know if they can. This feels like the kind of year that it could get kind of crazy, because I think everybody's got a fatal flaw, or at least more of a flaw than we've seen in any season over the last 10 years. But, you know, the fact that the conversation has gone there, at least the expectations have gone there very quickly, is a testament to how Notre Dame has looked in the early part of this year, despite the loss.
Yeah, I think it speaks to like how easy it was for this fan base to get attached to this team, this head coach, this quarterback. Like, the product is really good. Like, yeah. Notre Dame has had teams that have started 4-1 and gone 12-0 and yada yada. Like, but I don't think the quality of the product is, like, you know, your co-host Dan talks about how like college football is a TV show. Like, Notre Dame has had winning programs where the TV show's been kind of boring.
Yeah.
This TV show is freaking great. Like, this is killing it.
Yeah, this is season one of like a really good show where the writers are all
time
kind of
TV
like,
4 weeks in a row.
Yeah, the writers are afraid of getting canceled and they're just going to go for it. And yeah, the plot is superb. That's where we're at. And it's a likable team. It's a likable coach. The product on the field for the first 4 weeks. I mean, again, bad mistake at the end, but by and large, they played well enough to win that game. The product has been there. All the vibes off the field have been there. There's a lot to really invest in here. If you're a Notre Dame fan or just somebody watching college football, I can't think of a time. I've been doing my show since 2008. I can't think of a time in the last 15 years where the vibes around Notre Dame for people who don't like Notre Dame have been this positive.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's solely because of Brian Kelly. I don't know. I don't know what the reason is.
Like the bar Weiss, is pretty low to clear in that regard.
I don't know what it is, but something about this era of Notre Dame, at least for the moment anyway, has made them more likable by people who would be prone to hate them. And I think that's a good thing. I think that makes for important and compelling television from a college football standpoint. And so I'm with you on that front, Pete. It's nothing if not interesting.
Oh, I mean, the game day atmosphere. I did a Reddit AMA yesterday, and I got asked, you know, how far do you think the Notre Dame night game atmosphere has come since Crazy Train? And like, I hadn't even thought of that. I'm like, oh yeah, like it was such an amateur hour operation 12 years ago or whatever. Whereas now it's like, holy crap, this is freaking awesome. Certainly, like they won everything but the game. Like I'm not denying that. I still see irony in them kind of.
Can I,
not that they shouldn't be proud of that. I just can't think of many fan bases that would care about any of that if they lost the game in the fashion they did. But I do want to get to actual like football thing here.
Sure.
Can anyone explain to me where the hell Aldrick Estime was Saturday night? Because none of it makes sense to me. I mean, he goes for 20 carries against Central Michigan, 14 against Ohio State. I understand the game plan as far as getting the other guys involved, and that was effective. But they're averaging more than 5 yards per carry from the running backs in the second half. You have a 230-pound bruiser who was built for basically those end-of-game situations and for fourth and short situations, neither of which went to him. And, you know, they put him in the Jerry Maguire video to promote this game. He's on Pat McAfee wearing a basketball jersey, looking jacked as hell on Friday. You're giving him the superstar treatment Sunday through Friday. Do you not trust him on Saturday? Like, I just can't. Marcus Freeman said he's not hurt, and I guess I'll take his word for that, but that one just doesn't add up to me from a football standpoint.
Do you think the outcome would have been appreciably different if Estime would have gotten the ball more?
I think they should have and would have run the clock out on that last drive.
I actually did not have a problem. I think that's the right answer. I think that's the right answer. But I was just curious.
I didn't have a problem with how they used him at the end of the game. I had a problem with the fourth down calls where they didn't use him at all. Like that was a lean into your strengths opposed to run play action with three tight ends. Even though Hartman almost got it, the second snap where Tommy Eichenberg jumped over the line and basically sidetracked. Like it just felt like Notre Dame didn't play to its strengths there. But at the end of the game, I mean, Love was killing it. Jabron Prain is like oddly their best short yardage back as the season has bared out so far. I didn't have an issue with the end of the game. It was more, but those fourth down calls to me, those are the ones where I just like,
I think
you went away from who you are there.
Yeah, Matt, I think you're right. So that I believe that's the right answer, right? Using Estime at the end in crunch time, that would have been the time to use him more. And Pete, you're also right with respect to, you know, the big fourth down plays. I said to Dan, like, Marcus Freeman comes out at halftime and says he wants to be aggressive and go for it fourth and one on every fourth and one or some, whatever the comment was. And then he wants to be aggressive. However, when push came to shove, he calls like the most conservative plays possible or to your point, plays that kind of take them out of their identity. This is a team that, and we've seen it a couple times now, they try to get the ground game going. It doesn't necessarily work right away, but they keep with it and stick with it, and eventually they grind an opponent down. That's what they're going to do this weekend against Duke. And, you know, it was getting to that point in the Ohio State game where you could see they were starting to get better push up front. They were starting to wear them down. And, to not use the monster when you have him at your disposal on the biggest, like, short yardage situations, that is a little bit confounding. I like seeing the other running backs. I think there's a lot of promise there. I'm infatuated with Jeremiah Love, but Audric Estime is still sort of the main show in town. And it did surprise me a bit.
The nation's leading rusher entering that game.
And yeah.
14 carries. Yeah. Again, I get the game plan, generally speaking, to your point. Like, I think they really kept Ohio State on their toes using all those backs. But you do that so you can just punch them in the freaking mouth at the end when you need to. Like, when Ohio State gets stopped on fourth and inches, that no point, again, maybe I'm blindly optimistic or just completely forgot about the previous regime. At no point after that stop did I think Notre Dame was losing that game.
Yeah, and I mean, like, so to your point about game plans, right? I'm a Penn State grad. I watch a lot of Penn State games as well. Penn State has a similar model. It's not the same, but they've got Catron Allen and they've got Nicholas Singleton, both of whom are very, very good backs. The game plan on the ground is built around those two guys. They kind of alternate drives. And so it makes it difficult to game plan for any one of them because they mix and match so effectively. In this case, where Notre Dame had five guys that they seemingly were rotating in and out with, I don't know what the strategy was for when they were putting one guy in versus another. You guys might know that better than me, but it did seem as if they maybe were a little bit too fixated on getting those other guys action and not giving it to the bell cow.
Yeah, you may have mentioned this on your show, but like talking to people who like have the coaching sit down meetings on Thursday because they're on broadcast, like the staff does love to bring up the we're playing five backs and
love it.
We're hell bent on doing it. Like
they love it. The announcers
love it. It's close to a fantasy thing. It's close to a fantasy thing.
They love it.
I think that's a great recruiting tool, if you ask me. I mean, I was told, you know, before the game last week, talking to someone who used to work at Ohio State. He said, Matt, watch this recent Ryan Day press conference. He gets asked about the offense and he shouts out every single position but the running backs. And he's not doing that intentionally. It's just in Ryan Day's NFL background nature to not value that position, which in the NFL, they really don't value it. And if they don't value it, then you need to keep your legs and body fresh. And when you can tout that we've got five guys who can beat you, I think there absolutely is some value in that. I just don't get 20 carries for Central Michigan and 14 against Ohio State.
That's fair. Totally fair.
At what point in the game, Ty, I mean, as a fan, you've watched this kind of game, the Georgia games, you know, Florida State in 14, Clemson in 15.
Your facial reactions as he mentions each of them are just like,
but it's just like, I feel like in a lot of these games,
thanks,
you
Pete.
Go in and you know, Notre Dame, like, is that a talent disadvantage when it starts? The difference on Saturday night to me was like, I didn't feel that way really for the first time. And I was interested at what point in the game did that click in for you that like, Notre Dame is actually going toe for toe with these guys from a talent point of view. Not this isn't just some whip smart game plan and they're like out scheming Ohio State. They were actually kind of just beating them up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think once they started pushing them around on the ground, that in the second half in particular, when the ground game started to kick in, that's when it kind of opened up the rest of the offense. That to me, at least that side of the ball versus the Ohio State front, that to me is when it became apparent. I don't know if it ever became apparent truly when they were playing defense. It was always going to be a struggle to cover the wide receivers from Ohio State. Yeah. I think for the most part, they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, it's just like how often does like Notre Dame go into a game like that where you're just like, well, we're going to throw out Cam Hart and Ben Morrison. And like,
that's right.
You take your shots. And you as a Notre Dame fan think like, all right, do it. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Let's just sort of see how it goes.
So I definitely the second half of the game is when it started to become a little bit more apparent. Coming into the game, I think the source of optimism was if you followed Ohio State at all this year, it has not felt like they have achieved that next gear with Kyle McCord. Mm-hmm. And Kyle McCord could end up being very good. Kyle McCord did not do anything stupid in that game. He led them admirably on a game-winning drive down the stretch. He will probably be just fine. He's got a support system around him to almost ensure it. However, if you watched any Ohio State, they have not, like the sparks aren't coming off Kyle McCord the way they did CJ Stroud or any of the other guys that they've had in recent memory. And so that was kind of where it started. And then the deeper you got into the game, the longer the game went without Notre Dame feeling like they were at any grave disadvantage, it sort of became more apparent that, okay, they can play with these guys. They can absolutely play with these guys. And, you know, not to broaden the conversation too much, but it gives me a lot of optimism going into a game against USC. It gives me a lot of optimism going into a game against Clemson later in the season. it gives me a lot of optimism just the rest of the way, knowing that they've got proper depth on this offense, proper depth on this defense, that as they get deeper into the year and guys get tired, guys probably get injured, they have bodies who can step up and they can play in a big way that won't put Notre Dame at a talent disadvantage. I feel like the depth side of this conversation, which I'm sure you guys can speak to more than me, is kind of like an unsung hero here, because they've really added in a way that's meaningful and that I think will set them up for success.
If there was like a positive, like football specific takeaway or like an enlightening moment for me, it certainly was the defense playing as strongly as it did, even on the last, you know, obviously they lost the game in the last drive, but like, I didn't think about this in real time nor after, but I was checking my text after the game and a guy in Central Michigan staff texted me, said, Ohio State scored as much against Notre Dame as we did. No. Like, and Pete, you wrote this. I think if you said Ohio State would score 38 points across two games against Notre Dame and Marvin Harrison would have less than 90 total receiving yards,
you take that.
Like, yeah,
you
we take win one or two. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. The defense was certainly the biggest like positive building block, so to speak, you know, moving forward. I absolutely think they can win every game on their schedule the rest of the way. I don't know how you cannot think that after seeing the way they played against Ohio State. Certainly a lot of crazy stuff can happen. And, you know, this stretch is it's going to be challenging. I mean, you're getting four straight primetime games. Like, Louisville's offense looks really, really good. Now, it wouldn't shock me at all if Louisville overlooked NC State on Friday and loses on a short week looking ahead to Notre Dame. But that obviously has no bearing on the Notre Dame game itself. So, I don't know. I maybe seeing Arizona State hang with USC for four quarters makes me a little more optimistic about Notre Dame's chances. Not that I wasn't optimistic before.
Put a call to Drew Pine and see what the game plan was.
Yeah.
He hung with them okay last year. Okay. I mean, they didn't even score 30. But
do you guys have a guess on – I have it in front of me. This is why I'm bringing this up. I don't know off the top of my head either, but I'll put you guys on the spot. Because I keep dorky spreadsheets like this, do you guys have any guess as to projected, let's say, neutral site point spread for, let's say, USC and Clemson?
Ooh, I don't.
Neutral site?
Neutral site.
So when you say you have it in front of me, is that just like a machine, analytics machine? Or?
Yeah, I've got projections in front of me.
I think
some of which are home cooked, but what do you guys think?
USC minus
Mama H came up with them.
No.
USC minus three. No, actually neutral. USC minus six.
That's about right. That's what I have.
Even for neutral with Clemson.
Yeah, Clemson. Minus three.
Neutral.
I have a neutral site. Yeah.
Interesting. Or
no, excuse me. No. Notre Dame minus three, neutral site. Clemson.
Okay. All right. Makes more sense.
Yeah. All right. Clemson, so pick Clemson, a pick 'em game.
Yeah.
Because it's that
against the Riley brothers, one of whom I thought was the best hire of the offseason and hasn't exactly panned out that way. I mean, if not for Notre Dame, we'd be talking about Clemson giving that one away coaching wise against Florida State. That was pretty bad.
I think so. Yeah.
I was going to say, like, you know, college football is such a vibe sport. And like, so in the summer, I do like a fan survey, you know, just sort of like, and everyone always asks, like, well, what did you see on Saturdays that changed your perception of the rest of the season? So in the summer, you know, the question every year is like, you know, what's the record going to be? 50% of people thought 10-2, 1% thought 12-0. So I think accepting a first loss, because 99% of the people expected one loss at some point, shouldn't be maybe as hard as it's been. But the other question I always put in there is like, what's the minimum season you would take as qualifies as a good year? Like, what would you take as like, all right, good season? Maybe not everything I wanted, but like good season. And, you know, the choices are obviously, you know, win a national title, win a college football playoff game, make the CFP, win a New Year's Six bowl, or win a minor bowl, sign a top 10 class.
Yeah.
What's your, I'll take that as the minimum of success, like that I'd feel good about it as a Notre Dame fan.
Minimum's 9-3. And I think it always started from that point, because there were always three big games in the schedule, right? There's Ohio State, there's USC, there's Clemson. And if Notre Dame would have gone the entire season, if they do go the entire season, by winning all of the other nine games and playing tight against those three teams, that's, I guess, a success. I think it'd be disappointing, but I think I would still characterize that as a success. For me personally, what would leave me not feeling disappointed? I've said this on the show. If they, at a minimum, beat one of those three teams and win the others, that gives me a sense of optimism moving forward. I would love for them to win out, obviously, at this point. I mean, I think that goes without saying, but you know, I've always kind of used those three big games as my barometer for where this team is at. And as long as they're competitive in all three, that's great, but they got to win at least one. And I think that's important for Marcus Freeman moving forward. You got to win, that you got to prove that you can win at least one of these games this year, because all three of these teams are still, I know Clemson is two losses, but Clemson's still a pretty good team, and that's on the road late in the year. You got to prove that you can win one of those games, especially with how rocky it started last year, and especially now given the coaching mistake that we saw at the end of the Ohio State game. You need to prove that you can beat an Ohio State or Clemson.
Yeah, and it's like, to me, the USC game is almost a must, because you have to create a moment for your fan base to latch on to. Like, for how bad the first season was or how uneven it was, like, every Notre Dame fan can still latch on to the Clemson game and like what that felt like if you were there being down on the field. It didn't matter that Notre Dame, I think, was what, 5-3 going into the game. Like,
yeah,
you had that moment that carried you for the entire offseason. I think losing your two marquee home games would be difficult to feel like you had that moment as a Notre Dame fan, even if you won at Clemson in some ways. Just based on where Clemson is.
The good news is, if people didn't stay up late and didn't watch the USC-Arizona State game, it's clear that if USC's better on defense, they're not that much better on defense. And Notre Dame, with the style of bully ball that they want to play, can push USC around. And I think they will. So that plays to Notre Dame's strength. They're at home. Caleb Williams is obviously on the other side, so it's not going to be a picnic. However, I think Notre Dame's style of play puts them at a bit of an advantage going into that game with USC at home in week seven. The Clemson game, Clemson has not been impressive this year. They were better against Florida State, but Clemson still has a lot of sorting out to do, especially on defense. They're not playing defense as well as I expected. And I would expect that the Clemson game would look a lot like the Ohio State game. We like to call it pickleball on our show, which is a lot of short stuff. And as they said on the broadcast on Saturday, those games where it feels like there's no margin for error, that's going to be the style of play in that Clemson game. But I think Clemson's obviously shown that they are very beatable. They've already got two losses. And depending on how this thing shakes out for Notre Dame, they're probably in a very good spot to go into that game favored. So, you know, I feel good about those games moving forward. The question is, how do they respond to games like this week with Duke, or even next week, which is, Matt, I saw you reported another night game. You know, get four in a row here. Louisville will be rocking. It'll probably be a much more raucous environment than Duke will be this weekend. And I would expect that they would get an A game from Jeff Brohm, who he has proven he's a bit of a giant killer as well. So, you know, they will have an opportunity over these next couple weeks to set themselves up for hopefully that 11-1 season, Pete.
Yeah, Hartman threw six touchdowns against Clemson last year. Now, again, completely different offense, completely different styles of play. But, yeah, from what I've seen from Clemson so far, again, like, not to put the cart before the horse, it's like you see what you've seen from Notre Dame so far. You see what you've seen. And Clemson historically has been a program that plays its best ball toward the end of the season. Obviously, that wasn't the case last year. But that there's that one. And the USC one, it's interesting because we could talk about all these, what they should do and hypotheticals all we want. If they lose because Caleb Williams goes Superman like he tends to do sometimes and makes a great play at the end, you know, I think you just kind of, you know, tip your hat and say, we got beat today. If they lose because they blow the game like they did against Ohio State, then I think that's when the doubts and the, all right, what are we doing here, starts to really creep in.
No, I think all that's fair. Absolutely. And my thought with the USC game in particular is, you know, like you said, you lose to Caleb, you lose to somebody else's best player. If Notre Dame had lost because of Marvin Harrison,
making, let's say, Marvin Harrison catches that pass that's incomplete over Ben Morrison, you're like, well, those best on best.
Right. You'll take that. That's at least more understandable. But if it's due to a coaching error or playing soft prevent defense down the stretch, that's a little bit tougher to swallow.
What about this team do you think has like captured your imagination the most? Because I think you're like a lot of Notre Dame fans where like you just, there's a connection to this team. You know, we mentioned sort of the TV show aspect, like it's a banger so far. Like what do you think is it about this team that sort of grabbed your attention the most?
It's Sam Hartman. I mean, that's an easy one for me. It's Sam Hartman because look, they've had good lines before. They've had good running backs before. They've had good tight ends before. They've had good defenses, but they've had all these things before. The names are different now, and maybe it's not exactly the same. They had all that stuff before. That's not new. They had Drew Pine last year. They had Ian Book before they had Drew Pine. They've struggled for the last 10
years. Put some respect on Jack Cohn's name, will you?
Jack Cohn is fine. Jack Cohn is not Sam Hartman.
He was better than fine. He's not Sam Hartman, but he's a guy who I think gets lost to history. It's like he was 11-1 as a 1-year.
Because he was getting benched at Virginia Tech.
Sure. Absolutely. Okay. We'll give you that. But you get my point. More often than not, the quarterback has not been a relative strength for this team. They've been scheming around it more than they've been using it to, like, I don't know, present more of a multifaceted attack. And so this year, the fact that they have an offense that feels really balanced, they don't have to lean too much on one side of it in order to be effective, that is captured by imagination the most. Because when you give yourself more ways to win than just throwing it to Michael Mayer and hoping the ground game works with Audric Estime or whoever, that's appealing. That's suddenly like, okay, now they can make the playoff. Now they can contend with an Ohio State or some of these other playoff caliber teams and actually put a good foot forward as part of this conversation. So, you know, hopefully Hartman is able to continue on this trajectory. Hopefully they're able to continue finding weapons out wide for him to throw to. That's going to be a work in progress throughout the course of the year, I'm sure. However, just having that piece, and I think his calmness for me, totally separate from the schematic side of it, the calmness that he exhibits in the pocket is really exciting, because that's not something you can teach. It comes with experience, I guess, provided you're a 6-year starting quarterback, whatever it is for him. You know, maybe that's part of the learning and growing process. But it's just, I'm so used to a Notre Dame quarterback getting the snap and feeling frantic that to see Sam Hartman look composed, look at receiver A, look at receiver B, decide that receiver C is open in a calm fashion, that's a breath of fresh air.
Cool. I don't know if you had a follow-up to that, Pete, but no. Think that pretty much sums it up. This was a good, like, therapeutic 45 minutes, I feel like.
Was it? Was it cathartic?
I think people will listen to this.
The reason we got you on, Ty, is just like, we just want to make sure you're okay.
People got to stop asking me if I'm okay.
Ty, you might be an even more apathetic Penn State graduate than I am, but you could say, hey, look, number one defense in the country.
Right. Well, there you go.
You're like, do I want them to beat Ohio State? Because that would actually hurt or would that help Notre Dame?
I've been struggling with this. I've really been struggling with this. I don't know if it's better for Ohio State to go Superman and go 12-0 and look like the best team ever, or for them to lose and then that makes things chaotic. I think just as like a college football fan, I want it to get as chaotic as possible.
Sure.
I understand that Notre Dame's odds at this point of making the playoff are reduced. They would need a lot to happen in their favor in order for it to be a real thing. So that this is where kind of my sense as a college football fan and as like a podcast host and people who care about the sport as a whole, I just want to see it be as nuts as possible, and we'll let the cards fall where they may. But you know, I in the immediate aftermath of Notre Dame losing, I had so many people be like, "Are you okay? Are you good? Is everything?" I'm fine. Don't worry about me. It was a good game. Notre Dame proved that they were worthy of being on the same field as Ohio State. They probably should have won that game. And, you know, on to Duke. On to Duke. We'll see what happens. But I am fine. Thank you, P. I appreciate your concern, but I'm good.
I feel like you saying that, and like less with this game than maybe Marshall last year. I just remember like after the Marshall game, I was at an event in DC with a bunch of ADs and other people in college athletics, and they're all like, "Man, how's Marcus doing? Is he all right?" Whereas, like, if Brian Kelly lost to Marshall, I'd be like, "Damn straight, screw that guy." You know, it's just such a different vibe, like you said. About
You can excuse a loss to Ohio State, but Marshall
on paper, yes, the way it happened, I'll have a hard time excusing.
Or Stanford, also inexcusable.
Yeah,
But
yeah, I mean, it's just, it's those games that feel like they should be gimmies. When you lose those and look as putrid as they did in like the Marshall game, I mean, everyone talked that Marshall's got a good defense. Notre Dame should never lose to Marshall. They should.
It's like,
they should never lose to Marshall.
I'm not putting them on the same plane, but to me, I always thought the most frustrating guy to be a fan of, so to speak, would have been an Ohio State fan under Urban Meyer. Because you knew that was, yeah, they had a national championship caliber team every single year he was there. And they only won one. I think they only made two playoffs. And they had one game every year where you're just like, what? Like the Purdue game, the Iowa game, like games where you're just like, and I think that goes directly back to that guy being a maniac and the pressure cooker just getting to everyone one day a year. But I just, to me, that'd be like the most, like to me as a Yankee fan, what's disappointing is like, we're getting eliminated every year by teams better than us. Why are they better than us? We have more money than everyone. We should get every, like, I know that's like a selfish, it's not my money sort of thing, but like the Yankees should never be losing to the freaking Rays. You know what I mean? Like, it just, you have resources, take advantage of them or take your ball and go home.
Do we root for all the same teams, Matt?
Because
I know you're a Penn Stater. We're talking about Notre Dame on a Notre Dame podcast.
Giants, we're both Giants.
Yankee sadly. Giants.
Knicks, sadly.
You're basketball, but this is a lot of overlap.
You're Allentown, right?
Yeah.
I was stuck. I should have called you. We told the story on the show the week of the Alabama Texas game. My plane to Birmingham got rerouted to Allentown, which I didn't even know had an airport. And I was
for
a very long time.
To Allentown?
Yeah.
Good hell. Yeah, give me a call. I'm right here.
All right,
we'll do a live show.
Yeah, come down here to the studio.
New podcast.
See you, Pete.
About Allentown, PA. I'm out.
Sorry, Pete.
This is a good run, guys. I appreciate you.
Thanks
for coming on the show. If you are not listening to the Solid Verbal, what's wrong with you? You should download, subscribe that show. It's the best national wrap of college football going. It's Monday, Thursday. Dog walking tradition for Pete Sampson.
Yeah, there you go.
We appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks for being with us on The Independent.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, keep it up.
That was Ty Hildebrand. We thank him for his time. I think he probably thanks us a little bit for the platform to vent or talk it out a little bit, because that's what we do here. It was good to hear his perspective. It was good to hear the end where he's okay.
Yeah.
that was pretty funny.
We just want to make sure. Okay, Ty.
That's what we brought him on here
just
for.
Just want to make sure. Okay. Yeah. It's because look, it was, I wrote this a little bit in my mailbag that went up on Wednesday on The Athletic. Like that was like, it was had the chance to be like sort of a 10-year win where it could have impact the program for a decade. But it was also a chance to like push back on essentially 30 years of hurt. If you're a Notre Dame fan, like I realized, you know, beating Stanford in 2012 and Oklahoma, like Michigan, there have been some big wins at Michigan in 2005. Don't get me wrong. But I do think that the beating Ohio State to stay undefeated on a team where you're like, oh, maybe this team has a chance. Like that's going back to like 93 Florida State almost. In terms of the significance of the home win. So that's just, I think Notre Dame fans, getting to know many of them over 20 years, like I think that was sort of the vibe coming out of the game, was like, it was not only the missed opportunity to push it forward, but it was sort of a missed opportunity to like push back on all of those games that over the years you've lost if you're a Notre Dame fan, and think like, why can't it be us? It was because it was almost you on Saturday night got that close.
It's because it's a new coaching staff, because it's a head coach that everyone loves. It doesn't have the like sky is falling gut punch feel that it probably should, because of everything we talked about with Ty. Like he got them to play their A game for 55 minutes and they look like the better team, and that gives you hope and excitement. But I do think it's, the next time they're in a situation like that, say it's tied with USC in the fourth quarter and Caleb Williams has the ball, I think that sense of dread, if you will, like resurfaces.
Could be there. Could be there.
You know, because you got to see it to believe it. And they damn near saw it on Saturday, and it looked every bit like they were going to do it. But they didn't. And so you know, back to square one, so to speak. NBC release numbers, that was their highest rated Notre Dame game since 93 Florida State, which is absolutely insane. I will say what's even more insane is that that absolute blowout in Eugene did better.
I couldn't even believe that.
I couldn't believe that at all. I mean, 3:30 game. I get Coach Prime, but like the game was 41-0 till the end, so right? They scored minutes, a late touchdown. Yeah. It was over at halftime. It was over in the first quarter. 3:30. There are a million other games going on. Oregon's a brand, but they're not like a historic blue blood. They only got good 30 years ago.
Yeah.
They don't have the following of USC. I was just absolutely shocked by that. Although if you saw Dan Lanning's comments on Monday night, I thought he handled everything about as well as humanly possible and really thanked Dion for the opportunity and said how good he is for college football because he's drawn a lot of new eyeballs to the situation. Yep. I don't think Notre Dame will get to a point where they might face Colorado in a bowl game, but that would be pretty damn exciting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and Marcus Freeman was asked about Dion on game day when he popped up.
Of course, because if Saturday, you're going on ESPN and you have
to talk about Dion Sanders
breathing.
But he said something similar to what Lanning said, just like he's bringing a new fan to the television. And I think it's hard to create new viewers for the sport. Like, I guess in some ways I was surprised that Notre Dame Ohio State didn't do a bigger number than it did, because the game was so good. And like, what
it was the same? It was the same as last year's game. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was better than last year's game.
No, but the rating, they're all 10-5.
Right. I get what you're saying. And it's like, what were you doing watching Penn State, Iowa? Give me a break. Like there's not another game that you could watch that was on that was even remotely as good. So I thought maybe it'd be a 12-13. Like, I know it's not going to get to like Michigan, Ohio State numbers, but I thought maybe it would inch a little bit beyond the 10 million mark.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. That Ohio State Michigan game last year, which granted was unique even by Michigan Ohio State standards, I believe was 17 million. Again, 10's a lot. It was the second biggest game in college football so far.
Yeah,
this year.
It's a big number. We'll
see what USC is in a couple of weeks. But who do you think has done more for their respective sport as far as bringing in new eyeballs? Dion with college football or Taylor Swift with the NFL?
I have to say, like, as the father of a 13-year-old girl who loves Taylor Swift and a 10-year-old boy who loves the Kansas City Chiefs, it's like a Venn diagram at my dining room table, but it's just a circle where it's like I've never seen Tate and Sloan relate to one another so well as they do over the Travis Kelce Taylor Swift news.
Just wait till the breakup.
Yeah.
The breakup will cause a fight in your house.
Just an absolute disaster.
So you're a Niners fan, and Tate's, I'm sure, a naturally born Chiefs fan. So what was that?
Yeah, like? Patrick Mahomes has a way of like converting all elementary school age boys into fans of the Chiefs. So he's got Patrick Mahomes jersey, some Chiefs stuff, big Travis Kelce guy too. But yeah, the Taylor Swift news, it's big around here. It's big stuff.
I really wish, I was looking at the schedule, the Chiefs play in Denver. The weekend Colorado's at UCLA, and I'm like, God, if you just know Dion would have found a way to get Taylor to a Colorado game if she was in that state that same weekend. And that literally would have broken the internet.
We have it on good authority that there was at least a reach out on behalf of Notre Dame or ESPN on her as the game day picker, but it was not meant to be last weekend.
I don't know if that's a song lyric of hers or not, but it sounds
like... No, I don't think so. It's could be. But maybe that's a way. Maybe that's a bridge into who the game day picker will be at Duke. I think we know. It's gotta be Coach K, right? Like,
I don't know that. I that's where my mind.
Get Daniel Jones to come back? I mean, come on.
He's got nothing else to do. Yeah. He canceled on someone we work with on this podcast this year. I saw something going on Twitter from Carolina kind of sports talk radio debating whether that would be like a good or bad thing. Not good or bad thing, but like, do you think that's maybe like inadvertently a little disrespectful to Duke football? And I could understand that sentiment. I did cover a Clemson Louisville game. Now that I think of it, probably a week before the FBI came to Louisville, where Pitino was a guest picker wearing a Lamar Jackson jersey. So I get it. I almost would rather like a Jason Tatum or like a a real like elite NBA player who went to Zion or something.
Can talk a little bit about his love of Micah Shrewsbury or something.
That's
possible.
Grant Hill, Christian Laettner would be funny.
The former player might be fun.
Or who's the? Yeah, I mean NFL there.
I mean, just, I feel like Jay Billis is a little too much of an in-house, in-house picker.
I would agree with that one. What's Dick Vitale going to do? That's a real question.
Ooh, that is a good question. Maybe hopefully he won't say something that offends Duke, and then Mike Elko gets fired up and goes off on a rant at the end of the game.
by the way, not to go back too much to our earlier point, we've heard Bill Belichick give maybe the best quote Bill Belichick's ever given in regards to the Kelce Swift relationship. I need Brian Kelly's thoughts on this because Brian Kelly coached him in college.
Yes.
And I believe kicked him off the team for, I think, pot. But
traits? Probably a trait.
Yeah. And from what I remember reading, Jason basically pled with Brian to give Travis a second chance.
Oh, okay. I've never heard Brian really talk about that. Interesting. all right. So Saturday night, I'll be there. You will be, where will you be?
I'll be home. Penn State plays at Northwestern at 11 a.m. my time. I was hoping to take the girls. They're opting for a cousin's birthday party in the suburbs, which means I failed as a parent, because if you don't want to go to a Penn State Northwestern game, what's wrong with you? But it's perfect. It's a home game for me. I can literally take a train right near my house, get there in 13 minutes, probably not even right, be back and watch the rest of the slate throughout the day. So I'm excited about that.
Okay. So what is your vibe on what we're going to see from Notre Dame? Are we going to see a hungover team? Which, again, the players were in. I asked DJ Brown, who, honestly, credit to him for coming in for
interview. Yes.
But I asked him, look, you lost to Ohio State last year, and then essentially that beat you the very next week. Like, are there any applicable lessons from that to this? And he's like, yeah, we learned a lesson the hard way last year. Notre Dame learned some very hard lessons on Saturday night last week. I frankly, as much as they say it's not going to carry over, it's definitely, I need to see it. Sure. That's a big luggage coming with Notre Dame to Durham from last week. And I just don't know how they're going to carry that.
Yeah. I mean, they said all the right things, which I kind of expect them to do. And that's not nothing, but it also, they go out and lay an egg Saturday. It is nothing. And they lay an egg Saturday, then everything we said this week, this show, you name it, the season just takes on a completely different vibe and turn. And again, Duke's a very good football team that is absolutely capable of winning this game. I think this, let me 5.5 over under 51.5. I think it's going to be another low scoring game, not as low scoring as this past Saturday, but despite there being two very good quarterbacks on the field, I think both defenses are really going to show out. I'm leading 28-17 Notre Dame, and at 28-17, that's decided in the fourth quarter. Duke's a lot better than NC State. I know we had higher expectations for NC State than what we've seen from NC State so far, but Duke's a better coach football team. They've got a better quarterback. They've already got a big skin on their wall. They're going to be ready to play. I don't think I'd be short of Hartman having a 3 or 4 pick game, which he has had in the past, just not in a Notre Dame uniform. Mm-hmm. I'd be shocked if this was a blowout either way.
I would be too, because I just think both defenses are so good. It's hard to blow somebody out when you're not putting up 45 points. And I think Duke offensively is good enough to score a couple touchdowns. It would surprise me if Duke got to 20, but it wouldn't shock me if Notre Dame got to 30, but that seems like 28 seems like it's going to be enough to win the game. And I'm just going to copy your pick and go 28-17. And I think it's going to play out exactly the way.
I don't know if you've seen my picks this year. Notre Dame, they've been all right. Elsewhere, they've been freaking terrible.
I think at some point in the fourth quarter, it will be 21-17 Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame will go on a 12-play, 82-yard drive, to make it 28-17, and that'll be it. Because I do think the way the offensive line played last week, and I talked to Jared Parker about this on Tuesday night, like that was the best they have played all year.
Against an outstanding defensive
exactly.
line.
Exactly. And it sounds weird to say that because they got shut out the first half, but I thought the line played great. I think it was much like the NC State game, but better because Ohio State is way better. It was one of those times where you saw the offensive line really wear a team down.
Yeah.
And like wearing down Ohio State's front seven is like, that's no joke. I know like Michigan did it, you know, shout out Lou Holtz. He probably was watching when it happened, but like it, like for Notre Dame to do that, I was like, okay, this is, these are the kinds of things I want to see that makes you more likely to get on a run here than not. But it's like, it's a mentality check for Notre Dame as much as anything. And I don't, as much as they've said all the right things, I just don't have a sense of like whether to buy into like, we're all in this together. We flushed last week. We're just focused on Duke. Like that loss and the way it happened. I mean, it'd be, and this would be, this is completely dependent on the last two plays of the game with the 10 men. Cause like if Notre Dame had had, shoot, I mean, if that rollout pass by McCord, if he found Harrison and he scored, like, I don't know if we've noticed that they only had 10 players on the field, you know, because Ohio State didn't. Eventually we would get there.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have been this catastrophe or, you know, catastrophic mistake that like the players look at the coaches and be like, dude,
come on. I think it would be.
I mean, it wouldn't be nearly as bad. Two plays in a row? I think
it'll still be pretty bad.
Okay.
I think two plays in a row is worse than one in a row, but still losing the game, it would be bad. Especially when you lock that guy down all day and it's like, one and it's.
But my point is like, there's such a potential for like some side eye on Saturday night.
Sure.
You know, if the solid verbal was coming up with their nickname for the weekend, it could be side eye Saturday. Like it, I just don't know how Notre Dame's players are going to react to that once it gets going. I don't think it's like a, I don't know. It's a very interesting first quarter. I'm rambling in a way that I really would just want to say the first quarter is going to be fascinating on Saturday night, but I still think Notre Dame will win 28-7. 28-17, I just don't have a ton of confidence in how it's going to play out.
So I thought you were, when you were started that, I thought you
Ramble,
were going to say, sure, your words, not mine. When you started that, I thought you were going to compare it to 2014, where they went punch for punch with the national champs in Florida State. They lose on a call that by the letter of the book was correct, but no less of a gut punch. And then they completely collapse in the second half. Now that was not a, you know, that was an execution error. It wasn't a brain fart by the coaching staff. It wasn't point the fingers at anyone. It was a play that just happened. They went up against a Heisman winner in a hostile environment, went blow for blow with them. And you came out of that game as disappointed as you were that they lost.
Yeah.
You came out of it thinking if they can play this way on the road against the number one team, they can do anything. Now, I would also argue with the benefit of hindsight, that was a very flawed roster, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They had a lot of injuries. That was the year they had a lot of suspensions. They kind of played way above their head the first six games of the year.
Yeah.
And I thought what happened in the second half of the year, defensively at least, was represented the reality of that situation much better. So again, you don't know. College football is a funny, fickle game in that regard. And I look at Indiana in 2020. Michael Penix gets in the opener on a dive where he's not really in, but they rule him in. And it becomes this big win over Penn State, and they go on this big run. And everyone thinks Indiana's the best thing ever, and they've been maybe the worst Power 5 program in the country ever since that year. So I just think momentum is a very, very fickle and real thing when you're dealing with 18 to 20. I guess 4-year-olds in this case. So yeah, I mean, the proof will be in the pudding Saturday night. And then they're gonna have to come out there and do it again against Louisville and against USC and yada, yada, yada. But I think they're the better team. I don't think this locker room or this group of players is going to wilt under what just happened. But again, we won't know that for sure until we actually see them take the field together.
Yeah. No doubt. It's a very interesting Saturday. Like, it was just an interesting game anyway, but it got more interesting with how last week ended, because there's just a lot more on the table for Notre Dame. The pressure is on now, Marcus Freeman and the team. So it'll be interesting to sort of see how they respond. We will be back on Saturday night / Sunday morning with our next episode of The Independent. I'll be down at Wallace Wade Stadium searching for either a radio booth or a Notre Dame coaching box to podcast in. That's it for this episode of The Independent. As always, you can find our podcasts on Apple, Spotify, wherever you consume audio content. Please give us a 5-star review. We're also on YouTube, which has been growing quite a bit lately. So we appreciate all the subscribes over there. Matt, we'll be back Saturday for the next episode of The Independent post-Duke. Should be an interesting night. So until then, he's Matt, I'm Pete. You've been listening to another episode of The Independent.